Devil's Wood by Mark McNeice. Copyright Mark McNeice and Made Mark Publishing. Narration provided by Wondervox. Chapter 2. Going, Going, Gone. Peter brightly loved Lambertville, New Jersey, despite everything that had gone wrong there. It wasn't the town's fault that Susan had decided to divorce him and move to Doylestown, Pennsylvania, 20 minutes and a world away from the life they'd shared. She took their 14-year-old twin sons, Raymond and Jonathan, with her, upending their lives with the same cool efficiency she displayed when she sold things on Facebook Marketplace. One listing at a time, photographed, described, priced, gone. 20 years with Peter had seemed no different, at least to him. It was as if she'd offered their memories to the lowest bidder and no one had bought them. Once they'd sorted through what each of them wanted, with some of the leftovers put on the front porch beneath a handwritten free stuff sign, the break was complete. The change irreversible. As an antique dealer and longtime small businessman, Peter understood the impulse to sell. He just hadn't expected his life to be discounted so steeply. The divorce itself had been relatively amicable. They'd shouted their way through 6 months of accusations and recriminations before lawyers entered the picture, and by the time signatures were required, there was little venom left. Susan didn't hate him. He didn't hate her. They had simply grown too far apart to meet in the middle. Not irreparably different, just enough to make staying together dishonest. Neither of them wanted their boys growing up in a house like that, so they'd finally cut the cord and stopped the bleeding. Most of it, anyway. She'd even kept her name when they married. Susan Fleming, as if she'd anticipated this very outcome, or at least its possibility. She'd been a freelance graphic designer for most of their marriage, a job that made her move to another town relatively easy since there was no office requiring her presence. Their sons had his name, which provided a small measure of comfort. They stayed with Peter every other weekend in his condo on Union Street. He'd made sure to buy a two-bedroom so they would have a room of their own, with bunk beds they were quickly outgrowing. They would be young men soon enough, and Peter wasn't in a hurry to reach that milestone. The biggest blow wasn't the divorce. It was how quickly Susan had replaced him. Andrew Dowling of Dowling Sporting Goods. A modest but successful chain stretching from Doylestown to Philadelphia. 6 stores in all, the last time Peter checked. Researching the man didn't qualify as stalking, no matter how it might seem. Peter had never followed him, didn't know where he lived, and had only seen him in photographs and on the company's website. Okay, maybe on his son's phones too, even though they were reluctant to show him pictures. They were kids. They liked the adventures Andrew took them on, vacations Peter had never had the time for until it was too late. Facts lingered, truths hurt. Andrew was handsome and 5 years younger than Susan. Peter sometimes imagined telling her she'd be traded in for a newer model eventually. But the subject of her new relationship was off limits. Even the boys knew better than to say too much, but things slipped out. Andrew was taking them to a Phillies game. Andrew bought them Stockley Stormrider 95 skis. Andrew was flying them to Aspen in December. Each revelation was followed by an immediate silence, as if they could rewind time and take it back. Maybe it was the pain Peter failed to hide when they told him these things. Or maybe it was the anger. Curious Collectibles had survived for more than 20 years in a business that wore people out like dish rags used too long. When Peter first opened his shop in Lambertville, there were only 2 or 3 antique dealers in town. Now there were 6, including Whispered Treasures, run by the dreadful Patsy Lolly. She'd been in the storefront next to his when he had moved in, and they'd loathed each other ever since. He always called her Patricia whenever they interacted, which was as seldom as possible. He knew she didn't like it. He'd watched other businesses come and go, victims of bad timing, poor judgment, or simple hard luck. Restaurants, coffee shops, antique stores. The odds were never good. The trick was accepting the likelihood of failure that, and giving it your best shot anyway. He glanced at himself in the rearview mirror as he approached the estate. 42 wasn't bad. He still had his hair, full, if graying at the temples. He ran a hand over it, checking the firmness of the gel. Solid, wavy, presentable. He might not be Andrew Dowling, but he was a damn good Peter Brightley. He wore brown corduroys and a yellow button-down tucked into a belt he'd only let out one notch in 10 years. Not bad, he thought. I wouldn't kick me out of bed. The GPS guided him across the river from Frenchtown, then along the Pennsylvania side past Upper Black Eddy. He didn't know the area well, but he trusted the maps. When it told you to turn, you turned. Susan had never shared that faith. She always knew a better route, and almost always got them lost. He wasn't lost now. The house sat at the end of a long driveway, flanked by overgrown grass and a scattering of trees that offered little comfort. A dozen cars were already parked there. The colonial structure itself looked stranded, as if it had been lifted from a Virginia farm and dropped into rural Pennsylvania without explanation. The wraparound porch sagged slightly, its pillars worn. Paint peeled. Moss and lichen crept along the exterior walls, claiming territory no one had bothered to defend. Aside from the other cars, there was no sign of life. Completely alone, Peter thought, then dismissed the comparison between the house and himself before it could settle in. He parked beside a Subaru Forester and stepped out. The front door stood open, activity visible inside. Estate sales were essential to the antique trade. Liquidations of lives condensed into furniture, jewelry, photographs, objects whose owners were usually dead. This one felt especially final. It looked as if no one had lived here for a long time. Welcome, a man said at the door. You are? Peter Brightley. Curious Collectibles. Lambertville. Yes, we spoke on the phone. Derek Rollins. Peter recognized the voice. Polite. Slightly stiff. Derek had answered the phone when he'd called Red Oak Auction Services in Princetown earlier that week. He'd wanted more information about the sale to see if it was a match for what he offered at the store. Derek had claimed to be in the middle of something and had promised to call Peter back. He never did. Now that Peter was here, the man offered no explanation for the oversight. He offered Peter his smile, as practiced and precise as his choice of a navy blue sight and yellow tie. Derek Rollins was a package deal, the kind of man who memorized details and repeated them later to make you feel known, except when he wasn't returning, your call. Good morning, Derek, Peter said. Looks like I'm late. Not at all. 10 minutes yet. You can register with Rebecca and get your paddle. Inside, the foyer stopped Peter cold. This had once been a mansion. Standing alone in the middle of nowhere, it felt stubborn, like something that had resisted time for as long as it could and was only now surrendering. Rebecca sat behind a small desk, plump and solemn, perched on a wooden chair that looked dangerously optimistic. Name? Peter Brightley. You're the last to arrive. She handed him a paddle. Number 13. How lucky. She ignored the joke. Ballroom's down the hall. Ballroom? That's what they called it? A ballroom for ghosts? He asked. She didn't smile. She looked past him, as if there was someone approaching when he knew there wasn't. He took his paddle and left. The room held 24 chairs. 11 were empty. Peter took a seat near the end of the second row and glanced around, unsettled by how unfamiliar everyone was. He almost always recognized someone at these things. Hello, he said to the man beside him. The man nodded without looking. Derek closed the pocket doors, sealing them in. Peter realized he'd sat on the program and scolded himself, standing up briefly and picking it up. He skimmed it while the auction began. Delacorte family, long gone. Contents liquidated by a great-grandson in Philadelphia. Sparse details. No sentiment. The sale proceeded predictably. Furniture. Paintings. Nothing remarkable. Then a young man entered, wheeling a barrel on a cart. That's odd, Peter thought. Mr. Benjamin Delacorte was an avid walker, Derek said. A hiker by today's terms. Peter straightened. 12 walking sticks, Derek continued. Handmade, offered to guests when they visited. Peter was about to dismiss them when one caught his eye. Twisted, multicolored. Wrong in a way he couldn't explain. May we see them? Peter asked. Derek smiled. You may, but no touching. Peter got up and walked forward, stopping by the barrel. The wood on this particular stick spiraled in two shades of brown, threaded with a dull gold vein that looked intentional. Unnatural. Do we have to take all of them? Peter asked. That's why it's called a lot. 2,000, he said, returning to his seat. The bidding climbed. Higher than it ever should have. 2,500, 3,000, 3.5. 5,000, he blurted, having his paddle frantically. It was an insane price, unless that vein along the stick was real gold. Sold, said Derek, ending the bidding. To Lucky 13. It didn't seem like much of a joke now. David wheeled the cart away. You didn't buy 12 sticks, he told himself, knowing it was true. You bought one. And he knew, with a certainty that made his stomach turn, that he would never let it go.